Welcome to Cider Chat. In this episode, find tips on how you can safely bottle your cider and avoid what is known in the industry as bottle bombs. I'm not talking about intentionally creating weapons of mass destruction. I'm just talking about the fact that there can sometimes be too much pressure in a glass bottle. And because I want you to be able to bottle your cider safely, you gotta know that not all glass bottles are created equally. Some can withstand high pressure, like a champagne bottle, and some just can't, like the average small format bottle you might find in a six pack. And if you're like me and you want to have a sparkling cider where there are bubbles to kind of open the aromatics of the cider, well, you really want to know how to manage that pressure. So join me this week in this here episode 270, where we continue with the Ask Ryan series. That is Ryan Monkman of Field Bird Cider. Hello, my name is Rhea Wincoller, and I am the producer and cider MC of this weekly podcast, where we speak with makers, cider enthusiasts, and folks within the cider trade from around the world. And this week, we're going to be going up to Canada, speaking with Ryan Monkman of Field Bird Cider. And that little entry into this here podcast this week, it's a little ominous because, well, you know, these type of situations where you might be setting yourself up to fail and actually even get yourself hurt is something we want to talk about because it has happened to pretty much everyone I know for the most part in my circle. Back in the day when I was a kid, my parents would be making root beer in the basement. And luckily, my folks had a root cellar, which was like a contained room because, you know, they were always kind of experimental. And I'm sure that's where I got all my experimental sides of my personality these days from. And I remember as a kid, some of their precious root beer that they made popping in the basement and, you know, the neck of the bottles popping off. And luckily, nobody was in that little room, and so no one got hurt. But this is a real danger, and it is avoidable. So that's what we're going to be talking to Ryan about this week. And like all my conversations with this amazing cider maker, I always learn something, and this week, it really delivers too. So there's going to be links in the show notes to products that Ryan is talking about, along with all of his past episodes here on Cider Chat. So you just go to ciderchat.com, look for episode 270, and just kind of scroll down the page. This is one way that you can listen to the podcast, but of course, Cider Chat is available on all the podcast directories out there in the World Wide Web. So, you know, I think we're everywhere, but, you know, you never know. So let me know if you can't find me on a podcast directory. That would be great. And if you're new to this podcast, definitely I want to say hello, welcome to Ciderville. This is just an amazing world of makers all around the globe, and they're just bringing value to our conversation and creating a knowledge base as we move forward into the 2020s and lifting up cider makers' connectivity around the world. But it's not just for cider makers. It's for folks who don't really want to make cider, but just like enjoying it. So if that's who you are welcome. You don't have to be a super geek. Far be it from me to even describe myself as a super geek. I just love the world of cider and orchards, and I really love trees. I really love trees. Speaking of which, if you go to the Cider Chat Facebook page, I have just posted a video that our friend Arnold Nazarene in France has compiled together. His mom happened to be watching a TV show, and there on the program was a clip with a French maker by the name of Eric Bordelais. And he was talking about Sorbus Domestica. He's actually out in the field and bringing the viewers to a very, very old sorb tree. And I did a series of interviews with Arnold, who we call the French Pope because his passion for this amazing fruit tree that is in the same family as apples, pears, and quince and medlars. It's just absolutely contagious. So if you aren't on Facebook, let's see. I'm not really sure how to get you there. It's on the on Daily Motion or something like that. But if you are on Facebook, just go to Cider Chat Facebook page. Check out that video. It's really cool. And there are English subtitles. And a nice little thread of conversation, too. And while you're there, why not just like the page so you'll get notifications when I am posting something new to that forum. And to all the regular listeners and subscribers out there, and of course, all the patrons who help support this podcast every week via the Cider Chat Patreon page, I lift my glass to you and say thank you once again for inspiring me to deliver this podcast to you every week. I'm going to be right back with a wee bit of news out and about in Ciderville. For longtime listeners of this here podcast, like Kurt Henry, who is based out in western Pennsylvania in a town called Acme, which sounds like a superhero town. It's spelled A-C-M-E. You know, it's kind of cool. Like, I don't know. I just see all this kind of cool font for that. The cider is called Taddy Bogle. And he would know that back in the day when I first started the podcast in the year 2015, I was really looking at, my focus then was, do people spell cider making with one word or two words? And I want to say it's interesting because the trade conference that's coming out of the UK this week called CraftCon, on the front of their little notification, it says the only trade conference in the UK dedicated to cider making is returning. Now, in this case, they put it all as one word, which I don't see very often coming out of the UK. I often see that they're doing that kind of like Old English style of cider and then making. And here in the U.S., we see the American Cider Association, they still spell it separately, or sometimes they put it together. See, you know, it's so interesting and how that just goes all over the map. But I want to let you know, Kurt, and all the other listeners, there's a whole bunch of you out there. Big hugs to you all. You know who you are, and I adore you. This is interesting because, you know, we're just not seeing that. Anyways, I digress. The main thing I wanted to talk about was this amazing conference is taking place this week, April 29th and 30th. So that by the time you listen to this here episode, it may have already happened. I'm sorry about that. You should know that it'll probably take place next year. And I imagine it's going to be in person. But this year, it's virtual. And they have a wonderful lineup. In fact, if you were based in the UK, you would have been able to get a steal of a deal of ciders that they were shipping out. And if you had signed up for the event, you wouldn't even have to pay for shipping. Now, because I'm based in the US, and I know that would have just been too cost prohibitive for this event, I'm not getting any cider. So I just want to say to all you folks in the UK who are like, you know, kicking back the cider and going, woohoo, look what I got. I am crying into my glass of coffee right now because I'm holding my glass up to my eye. You can't see that. It's kind of sad and pitiful. I don't have that. In fact, I don't think I really have any like UK cider to speak of. I'm going to have to go perusing my local stores because I don't have any. But that will not deter me. I am still going to be at this amazing CraftCon 2021, and I totally support what they're doing. And I just have a fantastic lineup of different folks from all of the UK, folks here in the US, including myself. I'm going to be moderating a panel talking about how to attract customers to your venue, your site. Now, I don't have a venue. I'm virtual. But I think I do have something to provide to you on that piece there. So it should be really cool. And I'm going to be speaking along with Kath Potter, who is a pommelier. She's a certified pommelier. She's an amazing person, a great cider enthusiast. She's part of Cider Women, which is an online Facebook page group and just an online group of women based in the UK. Also, Nikki Kong. She has an online bottle shop called The Cat in the Glass. And we also have Adam Wells, who has been really making a space for himself out in the world of blogging and writing. And so the four of us will be chatting all about this. How do we bring people, customers, to the bar? It's called Bring the Bellies to the Bar, CraftCon 2021. There's a link in the show notes, or just Google it on the World Wide Web.
Walking through the orchards.
I am so missing traveling, and I'm really missing leading Totally Cider Tours. That was a little side gig I started a couple of years ago. I've led both tours in North America and internationally, and I'm looking at doing that once again in 2022. You can find out more at totallycider.com to see some of the past tours that I've led and to see a link to the email that you could send to me to get your name on the list now so you'll be the first to know when I start rolling out those tours. I spoke earlier about Eric Bordelais, and he's one of the folks that we typically stop at while we're in Normandy, because why not? He's a great guy, and he's willing to open up his home to us. It's pretty incredible. But he's just one of many fantastic cider makers around the world that I have connected over the past number of years, I'll leave it like that, doing this work in cider. And I'd love to share that with you and just get to hang out with all the folks and the listeners who are really part of my community and creating those bonds and just having one heck of a time, taking the worry of driving away and allowing me to save you time to enjoy cider at its best. Again, just go to totallycider.com or you could just send an email to info@ciderchat.com.
Smelling all the blossoms.
It's now time for our Q&A with Fermentis, who has kindly been sponsoring this here podcast with this wonderful question and answer period with Kevin Lane. And this week, Kevin's going to be discussing what is the ratio of nitrogen to sugar that Fermentis sometimes recommends. Take it away, Kevin.
Hello, my name is Kevin Lane, and I'm the Technical Sales Support Manager for the Americas for Fermentis. That's a good question. I mean, it's something that I know Fermentis does. I'm not sure how many of our competitors do it, but with each yeast, they're going to have a certain demand of nitrogen to carry out the fermentation for yeast growth and for fermentation. As a supplier, we generally know how much nitrogen demand there is for a certain strain. It's something that we test for when we're analyzing yeast, preparing yeast for the market. And really what it comes down to is that you can kind of build an equation of the amount of nitrogen or amount of... You could do it with really any different element to build somewhat of an equation to balance out the carbon coming from the sugar in terms of for healthy yeast growth and for fermentation. So what Fermentis typically will recommend is an amount of nitrogen per gram of sugar, because it's part of the equation that you can figure out for each yeast strain. So if you've ever seen us recommend nitrogen to sugar requirement, usually it's going to be a ratio. Usually it's going to be somewhere around 0.8, maybe up to 1. Could be lower, could be slightly higher. It's really dependent on the yeast strain itself, how much they require to carry out the fermentation, to grow appropriately, to really ferment well. So it is a little bit different than the way that some suppliers will recommend in terms of just a total amount of nitrogen. We like to make it a ratio of the nitrogen to the sugar, because not everybody's starting with the same amount of sugar in their cider or in their fermentation. So it really allows you to make a Brix measurement or to test your juice that you're starting to ferment for the level of sugar, and then to figure out how much nitrogen, how much nutrient you're going to have to add to this fermentation in addition to what's already there, which is a completely different story, but to try to figure out what the right balance is so that the yeast is healthy, performs accordingly, grows well, ferments well, and doesn't produce off flavor, doesn't have any problem with the stuck fermentation or anything like that.
To find out more, go to fermentis.com. And by the way, if you're a cider drinker like myself, which I am more often than not most of the time, I sure am glad that there are folks like Kevin Lane who can answer these kind of questions. Again, fermentis.com.
Kicking up our feet.
I do like kicking up my feet, and it's getting warm out, and the blossoms are ready to bust around where I am. Whoo! Shoot. Oh, and by the way, those little ditties, the singing, that's myself and my cousin Jay. And at the end of this here episode, as all episodes these days, you could hear the full song titled We Like Cider, sung by Jay and myself. Next up, we're going to be going to our featured conversation with Ryan Monkman of Field Bird Cider. Again, this is part of the Ask Ryan series 2021. And we're going to be talking about what steps one might take before you bottle your cider and prime it with both sugar and yeast. And this is all about making it so that you could eventually get sparkling cider. That's slightly carbonated cider. So we're going to talk about that. But first, as always, we do a little bit of catching up with each other, and he shares with us something that he dug up from the ground.
We have a buried barrel. I just emptied it.
A buried barrel, right. Yeah, you've been doing that. How's that going?
Are we recording right now?
I just pressed record.
we pressed it. The juice that we put into the barrel underground, we pressed using like a hand press, hand crank,
yeah,
or ratchet, I guess.
Yeah.
And we didn't have a liner for it, so we used a coffee bag, like a coffee burlap sack.
Uh-huh.
And it tastes quite burlappy.
Oh no! Who knew that burlap had such a taste?
It's profound. It's indecent.
Oh no.
But I actually, like, there's some good stuff underneath, so I'm going to chuck it into, actually, ironically, I'm going to bottle condition it, and I think it's going to turn out to be a really good scrumpy.
Now, when you say that there's some good stuff underneath, what are you referring to there?
Like, there's really solid fruit aromas, and, like, good spontaneous malolactic. Mm-hmm. It's got amazing texture. And it's got great aromatics beyond the burlap.
Nice.
So like one of these things is in the wine world, a lot of like robust Italian wines will have Brett contamination in them. And like if you get past the Brett, they're amazing wines. But you have to get past the Brett.
This is kind of the conundrum that I'm in, I guess, too. Because I have a bunch of a whole different blend of ciders. And these were made in 2019. One is like from my barrel that I had, and that's just been sitting. I took it out of the barrel. It's just been, conditioning, like in like a sealed carboys. And then like a blend of Golden Hornets that I collected and put in a small batch. And then like these other like red crab, like a whole cacophony of different apples that I was grabbing from here and there and crab apples. And now I'm trying to figure out what the heck do I do with this? And how do I find that balance between what lies underneath, like you're saying, with that from that buried barrel with the burlap? And then do I just go ahead and just bottle each unit on its own? Or do I actually blend it in? And maybe that's like the next question.
Sure.
But let's go to the bottling condition. And just to kind of give a lead to this, this is a situation that's really classic for, I think, a lot of cider makers, especially hobbyists. But I'm sure commercial makers out there are in the same way, too, because you're always kind of like, okay, what is the right amount? And how do I figure this out to carbonate a cider? So we're not doing a still with no carbonation. I have a whole bunch of cider. Definitely the yeast on the bottom is dead. It's been, the lees on the bottom, it's just like gone because it's been sitting there for so long. And I want to bottle it. And I'm looking at adding a bit of priming sugar and also yeast to kick it up because I can't rely on the yeast that's in solution right now. And typically I do a pet not where I'll bottle early before it's totally completed fermentation. But obviously we're in 2021, so it's 2 years ago. It's just been sitting there, and I know it's just kind of saying like, please bottle me. So what to do, how to approach this? And I'm looking not for like a really high carbonation, just a nice little sparkling cider that will I hope brighten the cider. But that's the first question. Is it, if you have a cider that, tastes pretty good, but I'm thinking by adding the sparkle, it's going to really open it up. So is that a good idea or what?
Yeah, I think it's a good idea. So bubbles make aromatics pop, and they also add some like mid-palate texture, which is really neat. There's like 1,000 questions you need to ask yourself when you go into the sparkling world, mm-hmm. about, you know, how you want to make this bubbly, how bubbly do you want it to be, all that kind of fun stuff. I agree with you that after 2 years on Lees, which is like super cool and totally Orion thing, so like I'm in love with that. Those yeast cells are now broken down. So we start seeing what's called autolysis, so yeast breakdown, mm-hmm. after about 9 months. You know, 2 years in, the yeast have broken down and I'm sure given amazing texture to the cider, but they would not be able to carry a fermentation. You're exactly right.
Mm-hmm. I want some sparkle. And yeah. I know that the only way to do that is by introducing some yeast and something for it to munch on, which is the yep. sugar. Obviously, I'm a hobbyist. I'm not a commercial maker, but I have a bunch of bottles. Anybody listening would know that if you have a bottle under pressure and it isn't strong enough, it could, you know, combust. And it's very dangerous. It's not a good thing. So I've thought ahead. I have some good bottles, like champagne style bottles, and I'm just going to put a crown cap on. So I'm kind of set up that way. The next step is I do not want to do like a traditional, you know, champagne style, you know, where you're like doing the riddling and it's doing the bottle ferment, and then I, you know, release the plug into the air and then cork and cage. Just want to get some sparkle in there. I don't care if it's going to be a little bit hazy, because I know the yeast in there will like leave a little bit of a haze. I'll just call it a New England style cider. referring to the beer world of New England IPA, but you know what I mean. So
yeah.
I think that's it in a nutshell. You know, I have all these packages that I've received from Fermentis, who's been helping to sponsor the podcast. And they sent me their 4 main cider yeast that are dedicated to cider. And I'm thinking about going with their AB1, which is like for all types of sweet and dry ciders. It's, you know, it says in their write-up, under difficult fermentation conditions. So that
perfect.
That speaks to me.
Let's dive in a little bit. So I think bottle conditioning is definitely the way to go. Mm-hmm. I mean, what distinguishes bottle conditioned from traditional method, mm-hmm. is that disgorging process. Mm-hmm. So in bottle conditioning, the yeast are going to stay in the bottle. Because of that, we typically target lower pressures. So, you know, forgive me for being Canadian and using metric units. A standard beer is like 0.7 bar of pressure. A champagne is 6 bar of pressure. The pressure differential is, you know, about 9x. In bottle conditioning, you know, we're somewhere closer to the beer end of the spectrum than the champagne side of the spectrum. And the reason is, when you open your bottle, if there's lots and lots of pressure in there, it's just going to gush and gush and gush. Mm-hmm. You're going to lose everything. At Fieldbird, we do some bottle conditioning. We do bottle conditioning on some of our Perry and some ciders. And we have stubbies that we do bottle conditioning on. And we have like a hard rule that we never go beyond 3 bar of pressure in a bottle conditioned cider. But most of the time we're actually closer to about 1.5. So about twice the sparkle of like a light beer. And in a moment, I'll talk about how we get that level of pressure and how we dial it in. But I want to like just give some general advice about bottle bombs, because you brought it up. They are very dangerous. So make sure you're using good quality glass. Crown caps tend to be better than swing tops if you're in that experimental range. And the reason for that is a crown cap is likely to break before heavy glasses. So champagne, which is fermented in very heavy glass, is almost always fermented. And like our traditional method ciders, we always use a crown cap on the bottle, because if we screwed something up, I know that that crown cap is going to shoot off before the glass explodes. It's messy. It's as messy as a bottle bomb, but leads to less broken glass, which is good. The second thing to know about crown caps is there's different sizes. There's two main sizes of crown caps. Again, Canadian, so forgive me, but 26 millimeter and 29 millimeter. And a standard beer bottle is 26 mil, and a standard champagne or sparkling wine bottle is 29. Most hobbyist equipment is set up for the 26 mil caps.
You know, they sell the capper with it. Well, the one I have, which is like the kind of the wing capper.
On
the other side, and you're able to flip the contraption around so you could get either 29 or 26.
But, oh, perfect.
But there are some extra attachments, and I have those attachments for both sizes. Just back up to the bottle bomb piece there.
Yeah. The best way to avoid bottle bombs is to manage your sugar.
Dag nabbit, I knew you're right. Okay.
Yeah. Right. So it can happen anytime.
Yeah.
And this is like bottle bombs aren't unique to hobbyist makers either. In keeved cider making, bottle bombs are like a major problem. Huh. So when they go into secondary fermentation in bottle, it's frequent, like it's an expectation to have bottles explode a certain percentage. Mm-hmm. So it's not unique to the home landscape. But the best way to manage it is by managing your sugar. There's two ways to do that. So one is know what your sugar level is before you go into secondary fermentation, and don't assume that your cider is at 0 grams per liter sugar. So hydrometers are great for tracking, but they're at the end of fermentation, because alcohol messes with density and so does sugar. It's hard to know. You can't just say, oh, I'm at 0.95, so I'm 0 grams or I'm dry. Mm-hmm. You don't know that for certain. Because alcohol and sugar both play roles in that. So do a bunch of other things like lees. Mm-hmm. So there's a product you can get. And I think in America, you can get it on Amazon. I don't know for sure. But there's these tabs that used to be used for diabetes tracking called Clini tabs, C-L-I-N-I tabs. We used to be able to, like, you know, 3 years ago, go into the pharmacy and buy a container of them for like $10. Now they stopped selling them at the pharmacies here, but we can still buy a product called Fermin Test, which I know is available in the States, and it's like a small jar of about 40 tablets. Mm-hmm. And it's a really easy test to do. What you do is you put a few drops of cider and a few drops of water and one of these little tabs in a test tube or just, you know, a small glass kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Mix it up and look at the color. So the color indication will tell you if there is sugar left in it. So if the color is like orange or red, then you know that there's some sugar. The Fermin test tells you how much. The Clini test doesn't. Mm. And if it's blue, you know there's no sugar left. Mm-hmm. So it's, if you're able to get your hands on those, which isn't actually that difficult, and nor are they very expensive, it makes a big difference in your next step.
Is it C-L-I-N-I or C-L-I-N?
It's been 5 years. It's been 5 years since we've had them available here. Right. It might be C-L-I-N.
Yeah, I'm seeing this on a online right now via a veterinarian supply for dogs. Clin tabs. Yeah, 59 cents per tablet. And it's called, let me see if I can read it, Dindamycin hydrochloride. Is that?
Yep.
Is that what it is?
Yep.
Okay. So if it's not going to tell you how much sugar it is, then what's the value over that versus the other tests that would tell you how much? I mean, it's just telling you color-wise, sugar or no sugar, and that seems like that's kind of incomplete to the equation.
It's somewhat incomplete, but if you're anything orange, like bright orange, is about like 5 grams per liter residual sugar.
Okay.
So if you're below that, so if you're in the blues or the greens, and I'm actually holding a ferment test in my hand. I'm doing this call from our lab.
Oh, okay, cool.
But you know, you shift out of the green zone at about 2 grams per liter, and 2 grams per liter is going to make a difference, but it won't turn you into a bottle bomb.
Okay.
But if you do one of these tests and you're orange, I would not proceed because that could be 5 grams. It could be 10 grams. And that's a whole world of a difference that we'll get to in a minute.
Okay.
But the first thing I would do is if you can get your hand on them,
yeah,
try the ferment test or the ClinTabs. They're like, well worth it. If you think about 59 cents to save an entire batch of cider, we use a product called Fermin Test, which I can tell you who makes that. It's the same idea, but it's specifically designed for wine and cider. And will tell you how much residuals there is. Mm-hmm. It's FERMENTEST. And we buy it from our Lafort supplier. It's not a Lafort product, but I bet you like Carolina Wine Supply or someone like that would carry it.
To follow up on Ryan's recommendations, I did a bit of detective work online searching for a product. You cannot get the ClinTabs unless... well, they are part of your dog's prescription, and that seems like more hassle than it's worth and just kind of sets up a whole weird scene. And in terms of the ferment test that Ryan got, I don't know if that's really something that I would need as a hobbyist. So I have 3 websites listed in the show notes, sites directly to the product. It was very difficult to find it on the CarolinaWineSupply.com website. And there's also 3 different prices. It ranges for all the same product. Again, it ranges from $32, $36, and then $50. So that's your choice. And maybe some of these places will be close by to you. You could probably go and pick it up and save the $17+ for shipping. Yeah, it's a hefty price, but so worth it in the end. I mean, you think about how much work you put into your cider. It's definitely worth it. And you could use, there's multiple tests in there for a whole bunch of batches of cider. So again, check that out in the show notes. I'm going to just close out this episode for this week with Ryan to give you just a little bit of a peek into what we'll be talking about next week.
If you want to be safe, that's the safety check ahead of time.
Mm-hmm.
Which now gets us into the fun math of sugar.
Okay, so there you have it. This week we covered how to determine how much sugar, residual sugar, is left in your cider before you bottle, and that means before you add priming sugar and yeast to do a bottle conditioned cider. And next week's episode, we're going to be looking at that next measurement of how much sugar to add. And as always, it's a really fun time listening to Ryan. He makes the complex simple, and that is what we need a whole lot more of in this world, isn't it? And with that, Ciderville, I leave you here. This is Real Wind Caller, signing off for now. Looking forward to seeing you in Ciderville.
We like cider, we like ponds, we love orchards and having fun. There is a reason,
there is a reason why we do it like this.
Oh yes, there is.
There is a reason why we do it like this.
Oh yes, there is.
There is a reason why we drink it like this.
Oh yes, there is. There is a reason. We like walking through the orchards, dancing in the streets, smelling all the blossoms, kicking up our feet. We like cider, we like palms, we
like orchards, having some fun.
There is a reason.
There is a reason why we do it like this. Oh, yes, there is.
There is a reason why we do it like this.
Oh, yes, there is.
There is a reason why we drink it like this.
Oh, yes, there is.
There is a reason. We like walking through the orchards, dancing in the streets, smelling all the blossoms, kicking up our feet.
Oh, yeah.
We like cider.
Oh, yes, we do.
We like palms.
Oh, yes, we do.
We love orchards, having some fun. There is a reason. There is a reason why we do it like this.
Ba-da-da-dum.
There is a reason why we do it like this.
Ba-da-da-dum.
There is a reason why we drink it like this.
Ba-da-da-dum. Ba-da-da-dum.
We like walking down the orchards, dancing in the streets, smelling all the blossoms, kicking up our feet.
Oh, yeah.
We like cider.
Ba-da-da-dum.
We like palms.
Oh, yes, we do.
We like orchards, having some fun.
Yeehaw!